On 88.1 WIPR, I'm Tom Hall, and this is Maryland Morning. Today, we continue our Focus on the County series with a look at Kent County. The smallest of Maryland's 23 jurisdictions, it's home to Chestertown, a popular destination for retirees, and Washington College, which awards one of the largest literary prizes in the nation. I'm joined this morning by Kent County Administrator Shelley Herman Heller and Chris Serino, the mayor of Chestertown, to talk about their efforts to attract new jobs, young families, artists, and more tourists. Then, theater as therapy. 30 years ago, Joanne Lewis Margolius moved to Maryland from her native England to form the Magical Experiences Arts Company, which presents interactive theatrical programs for disabled children and adults to address the often overlooked emotional dimensions of their lives. Tom Pelton puts the environment in focus. Nathan's got the local news. Maryland Morning starts right after these headlines.
I'm producer Rob Sivak. To catch the news, you'll need to listen to us live on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday mornings at 9 o'clock on 88.1 FM in Baltimore and Frederick, 106.9 in Ocean City, and streaming online at wypr.org/listen. Now, on with the show.
Thanks, Nathan, and good morning, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. It's Maryland Morning. Glad you are along for the ride today. We begin this morning with the final installment of our Focus on the Counties series, in which we've invited county leaders into the studio for conversations about their most pressing local issues. This morning, we turn our focus to Kent County on the Eastern Shore. Kent is Maryland's smallest county, with just about 20,000 residents, and it is one of nine Maryland counties without a county executive. Instead, Kent County voters elect a board of commissioners, and that board, three people working part-time, appoints the county administrator. That county administrator for Kent County is Shelley Herman Heller. She joins me on the line from the studios at Washington College in Chestertown. She was appointed county administrator in July of 2015. A Kent County native, she was town administrator for her hometown, Betterton, Maryland, from 2011 till 2014, and then a finance officer for Betterton before taking on the top job with the county. Ms. Heller is 43 years old. She lives in Chestertown with her husband, Peter, and their two children. Chris Serino joins us as well. He's the mayor of Chestertown. That's Kent County's largest town. It's a part-time position. In his other day job, Mr. Serino is vice president of the Sultana Education Foundation, a local nonprofit that focuses on the history and ecology of the Chesapeake Bay. Chris Serino was one of seven mayoral candidates in Chestertown's November 2013 election. He won decisively with 45% of the vote and began his four-year term as mayor in January of 2014. Before being elected mayor, Mr. Serino was a member of the Chestertown Planning Commission for 6 years. Mayor Serino is 47 years old. He and his wife, Michelle, and two sons also live in Chestertown, and he also joins us on the line from the campus of Washington College. Welcome to you both. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Good morning.
Ms. Heller, let me start with you. Explain how the government is set up in Kent County. You are the county administrator, but not elected by the voters of Kent County, but rather the commissioners. How does that work?
Correct. It's an appointed position. The commissioners, as you explained, are elected. There are three of them. Amongst themselves, they elect the president, and then they appoint a county administrator to help with the day-to-day operations of the county.
Mm-hmm. And how big is your staff?
We have about 200 employees.
Mm-hmm. For the whole county?
For the whole county.
Right. And Mr. Serino, you are a mayor. That's a full-time, you have a full-time job with the Sultana Education Foundation, but a part-time position as the mayor. What is the setup for the town of Chestertown?
So the town of Chestertown has a mayor that presides over the whole community and also four council members that are elected in different wards. So at a typical council meeting, there's five of us. So if we have to vote on something, you know, we can have a 3-2 majority. So that's basically the setup. We have a pretty small staff at town hall. And as you said, it is in theory a part-time position. But when you're the mayor of a small town and the smallest county, it's hard to get away from your mayoral duties at any time.
Yeah, I bet. And there's also a town supervisor. I guess that is a full-time position. How does that work?
Yeah, so we have a full-time town manager who's kind of like Shelley's counterpart for Chestertown, and then we also have a full-time zoning administrator who kind of oversees all the zoning codes in the community. And honestly, I lean pretty heavily on those two individuals because they're at, you know, town hall 9 to 5 every day, and I just can't do that.
Sure. Ms. Heller, you, as we've mentioned, Kent is the smallest of the 23 counties here in Maryland. You get lots of visitors. Who lives in Kent County? What kind of folks are living there now?
Right now we have, and it, traditionally it has been a very heavily agricultural community. And we also have a lot of education and healthcare professionals here. We have Washington College, which has a tremendous amount of staff members, our public school systems, a few private school systems, and we do have a hospital here.
Mm-hmm. And is there what sort of industries are in Kent County besides agriculture? Is it really predominantly agriculture?
Well, we do have a couple of very large, thriving industrial companies, to include Dixon Valve. That's the biggest one, and that is located here in the town of Chestertown.
And I understand that the population is shrinking. So Mayor Serino, for example, in Chestertown, you're not experiencing population growth, and I understand that it's a goal to try to increase the number of folks choosing to live in Chestertown. You have a lot of retirees, I guess. What is it, for example, the fact that you've got a population that's shrinking a bit, what's the impact, for example, on the school system in Chestertown?
Yeah, I wouldn't actually say that the population is shrinking. I think it's been stable, and we've had slow growth. And actually, for many years, the county and the town really kind of wanted to be stable. And while, you know, the great the housing boom was happening, and a lot of towns were kind of losing their character and getting surrounded by these kind of, I call them plastic house developments, kind of the McMansions, we really wanted to retain our character. So it's very interesting because now we've kind of leveled off. And one thing that's happened, as you alluded to, is we've really become a significant retirement destination, especially Chestertown, where we have Washington College. We also have a hospital. And that combined with the beautiful bucolic setting, the fact that we're located on the river, has made us very attractive to retirees. And the net result on the school system is that, in fact, in our public school system, our numbers have been slowly declining for the last, I'll say, decade or so. And so that makes it challenging because, you know, school funding on the state level is determined by the number of students in the classroom. So it makes it challenging to provide all the amenities that most schools can provide when your funding is tight because your numbers aren't as robust as maybe you'd like them to be. So we have taken on a lot of initiatives both on the county and the town level to encourage economic development. But I would say that we're looking for economic development that grows the towns and the county by putting our best foot forward. And I could go into a long list of those, but basically things that support businesses that we already have, supporting Washington College, supporting our local hospital, encouraging companies like Dixon Valve to stay here and grow. Also in Chestertown, encouraging more heritage and economic tourism by creating like an arts and entertainment district downtown and really marketing ourselves more aggressively as a destination where people come visit. They stay, they spend their money at our businesses, and either they go back or oftentimes they get really curious about what's this little hidden gem out here on the Eastern Shore, and a lot of them end up moving here, honestly.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. That's the mayor of Chestertown, Maryland, Chris Serino. We're also joined by the Kent County Administrator, Shelley Herman Heller. This is part of our Focus on the Counties series. Ms. Heller, a few days ago, last week, I guess, Governor Hogan announced a plan to begin the planning stages for a possible third span of the Bay Bridge. Any discussion in Kent County about having that span go from Baltimore to Chestertown or to, you know, directly into Kent County somewhere? I mean, if you look in the map, it's a stone's throw from Baltimore to Chestertown, for example. They're almost the same latitude. It's right across the water. Any discussion about a third span being located where you all are?
Throughout the decades, there's been a lot of conversation about the third span or a span even prior to the build of the first and second spans coming into Chestertown or one of the surrounding communities here in the county. It's probably not very well received. I would say that that's a fair statement to make because we really enjoy our slower pace of life and the rural environment here. We encourage the study for the third span as far as moving traffic from point A to point B across the bridge. But I would be very shocked if there was very much support to have it land in Kent County.
So you're not at all concerned about the slow growth. I mean, folks have called Kent County and Chestertown as no growth communities, and you don't consider that a slanderous description, huh?
What I like to think of as economic growth for us would be enough growth to remain sustainable. So we would like to see our current businesses thrive and potentially even have some more businesses come here. But we don't want to be a plastic community, as Mayor Serino mentioned, or a bedroom community. We like people to come here and live here and work here.
Mayor Serino, talk a little bit about these arts and entertainment district designations that you have in Chestertown. They've done that in a number of places here in Baltimore and throughout the state of Maryland. I think Silver Spring has one and Bethesda. How are those set up, and what are your hopes that they will achieve?
So the Arts and Entertainment District is a state designation, and it essentially is a way for local governments to work with the state to provide tax incentives that encourage the arts to grow and flourish in your community. And if you were to visit Chestertown today, you'd notice that the arts are actually a pretty major part of downtown Chestertown, our historic district, our historic core. There's probably at least a dozen art studios and also entertainment venues. And it's really added a neat level of character to our community that we like. And so we want to promote that and grow that. So what the A&E district does is it provides tax incentives for property owners to renovate their properties. And if they do that for art studios or entertainment purposes, they get tax breaks on that. And also it encourages artists to create art in the district. So if I'm an artist and I create a piece of original art in the Arts and Entertainment District in Chestertown and I sell that piece, I can write that off and it doesn't count towards my income tax. And not only can I write that off if I sell the piece in Chestertown, I can write that off if I sell it at any of the other A&E districts throughout the state. So it's a really neat network of incentives that the state helps towns put in place to stimulate the arts.
That's Kent County, or rather, Mayor of Chestertown, Chris Serino. We're also joined by Shelley Herman Heller. She's the Kent County Administrator. By the way, the Chestertown Jazz Festival gets underway tomorrow night, runs through Sunday. We've got more information about that on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. This is the final installment of our Focus on the County series. Stay with us. We'll be back after a break for the news with more on Kent County. I'm Tom Hall. Here's Nathan.
Thanks, Tom. You're listening to the Maryland Morning Podcast, a service of your public radio, WYPR, in Baltimore. Find more podcasts at WYPR.org and tell us what you think by email, mdmorning@WYPR.org. Now, back to the podcast.
Welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. As Nathan said, this is Maryland Morning. If you've just joined us this morning, we're continuing concluding our Focus on the County series with a conversation about Kent County with Kent County Administrator Shelley Herman Heller and the mayor of Chestertown, Chris Serino. They have been joining me on the line from the campus of Washington College in Chestertown. By the way, if you're looking for an excuse to visit Chestertown, the annual celebration known as Riverfest takes place in just a couple of weeks on September 23rd and 24th. The Chester River will be lit up with some light sculptures that were big hits when Baltimore featured them at Light City a few months ago, and there are lots of activities both in and out of the water. We've got a link to information about Riverfest on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. So, Mayor Serino, when we talk about the schools and we talk about, I know you're considering consolidating some of your elementary schools. I guess there are five elementary schools. You're thinking about bringing that number down to three. Is it a goal of the town of Chestertown? And Ms. Heller, let me have you weigh in on this as well in terms of the entire county. To attract young families, do you think that that's something that you need to concentrate on given the clear popularity you have with a lot of retirees? But are you interested in having younger folks come and take up residence in Chestertown and Kent County? Mayor,
well,
let's start with you.
I would say absolutely. We're interested in attracting young families. We're working really hard on that. We actually just finished a project working with Kent County Middle School, which is right down the street from my house, where the town went out and got a grant to help them basically refurbish their entire outdoor campus. So anything that the town can do, it's a little bit of a conundrum as the mayor of Chestertown because it's really a county-run school system. But anything that the town can do to help with individual schools located within our jurisdiction, we're absolutely going to do. And then, yeah, we absolutely want young families to come here. We've been working on, improving the recreational amenities that we have in our community that are attractive to young families. But also, we want, businesses here to grow and thrive. And we just worked with the county to institute something called an Enterprise Zone, which is another state program that provides tax incentives for companies to basically set up shop here in Chestertown in Kent County. Provides tax credits not only for construction, but also for hiring new employees. So I'll let Shelley address the school system because that's really more of a county operation. But we're not anti-growth. I would say we're anti-sprawl. We want growth that fits with the nature and character of our town and the county, and there's plenty of room for infill development in that capacity.
And Ms. Heller, where does it stand with the debate about consolidating these elementary schools from 5 down to 3? Where are things at this point?
Right now, we are taking a moment and we're stepping back and we're going to evaluate the county commissioners as well as the school board the best way to proceed. Unquestionably, we would like to see enough young families come to the community to have 5 elementary schools, to have robust programming in each of the elementary schools. And it's very difficult when you tell a community that a school, which is part of how they define themselves, is going to close. So in an ideal world, we would not like to consolidate schools. It's a challenge here in the county to attract the young families, since we are becoming more and more popular with the retirement community. As Mayor Serino mentioned, there's the Enterprise Zone, but we've also launched out recently with our fiber project, and we are currently installing fiber around the county, which will connect several governmental institutions. But after the backbone is built, they will be installing fiber to the homes and to businesses, so that we will be in the very near future a 1 gig community, which is extremely rare anywhere in the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's a great example of a forward-thinking initiative on the county's part. That's really exciting to me because I feel like that's growth that we can grow and still retain the rural nature of who we are, because basically what that could potentially encourage is a lot of small businesses where somebody is running, an e-business out of their home, and they appreciate the rural laid-back lifestyle, the access to the water that we enjoy here in the county. So it encourages those younger entrepreneurs to come here without, selling out to developments that really are out of character with what Kent County and Chestertown have always been.
Yeah, this is your dig for a gig initiative.
Yep.
I understand that you're hoping that you're going to hook up, virtually 100% of the homes and businesses in Kent County. Now, explain to me how this works. In other words, the county is going to be providing internet access as opposed to private carriers. I mean, here in Baltimore, we have Comcast or Verizon or something like that. But the county will be doing that instead of private providers. Is that right?
No, not exactly. The county is installing the backbone, which will connect the 54 anchor institutions around the county, and a private company will come in and lease dark fiber, which will get the fiber from the backbone to the houses. And for these companies that provide that service, they are viewing this as a long-term investment. So they're looking at it in the long run, over 10 or 20 years, which is what makes it profitable for them.
And what's the estimated cost of this, doing the sort of infrastructure, the backbone, as you call it?
The county's obligation in this venture is about $4.5 million to lay the backbone, and the rest will be private investors the companies themselves.
And then individuals can opt in to purchase it for their homes or their businesses?
Correct.
Yeah. And what's the time frame on this? When do you expect everybody will be fully online?
The 54 anchor institutions will be online within about a year and a half, and the fiber build from there is estimated to be not that much longer. As the backbone goes in, the fiber will be provided bit by bit to the houses and the the business communities. So it's not, they'll be running, it's a concurrent project. As the backbone gets lit, so will the properties along that route.
And that comes out of the general tax revenues of the county, or are there any special fees that are going to be assessed to pay for it?
No, that has all been, this was very forward thinking of the commissioners. Years ago, they started setting money aside for this project, and the county chose to fund this with the general fund years ago.
That's Kent County Administrator Shelley Herman Heller. She joins us on the line from the studios at Washington College in Chestertown, along with Chris Serino. He's the mayor of Chestertown. It's our Focus on the County series here on Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Mayor, it's interesting. When I happened to be visiting, of all places, Tallinn, Estonia, about a year ago, and you get off the plane, and you get off the plane in Tallinn, and you walk through the airport, and there are all these posters about how Tallinn has the fastest internet in the world. And this is a great place to start a business, bring your family. The climate in Tallinn is not exactly conducive to people wanting to live there year-round necessarily. But it's interesting. That is the single point of sale that they make about Estonia. Do you foresee Chestertown as having that become a real, you know, the fact that you're going to have internet access, which will be pretty fast, I understand it. As I understand it, is that going to become a big point of sale for the town and the county?
Absolutely. I really think, you know, in terms of rural areas, and as you pointed out, we're one of the more rural counties in the whole state. I think we're really going to be on the cutting edge of you know, a county that is as rural as we are. Having 1 gigabyte service is almost unprecedented, and so it'll be very interesting. From an economic development standpoint, I firmly believe that it will draw those younger entrepreneurs that are on the cutting edge of the internet businesses that you can create these days. And it's very, very exciting because, as I said, I wouldn't say we're anti-growth, but we want growth that doesn't jeopardize the character of our communities. And I think that has a ton of potential. I don't think Chestertown will ever say that that's the only reason to come here, because there's so many great reasons to be in town. We've got a gorgeous tidal river in the Chester River, I think one of the prettiest rivers on the whole bay. We've got the Sassafras River on the northern end of the county. We're surrounded on the western border of the county by the Chesapeake Bay proper. So, you know, if you love water, if you love a slow-paced lifestyle, if you love cool historic towns, you know, those are always going to be big marketing and selling points for not just Chestertown, but the county. But adding that 1 gigabyte service is really, I think, going to be hopefully the cherry on top of the package that attracts people and young families back to this area.
And Ms. Heller, you know, finding the balance between maintaining that kind of life and that rhythm, along with, you know, having, as you say, you know, not sprawl, but you know, systematic growth that makes sense. There's a group of citizens who formed an organization called Keep Kent Scenic, and they opposed a company that wished to build first wind farms, and then the company, which is called Apex, it's a clean energy company, that after first proposing a wind turbine farm, they've now sort of nixed that proposal, and they're looking at solar farms. Where does that stand now? Where does the proposal to use, I guess it's close to 370 acres of farmland for solar panels, where does that stand at the moment?
Right now, that's with the Public Service Commission, with the state Public Service Commission. The county is not in favor of this particular project, only because it is not permitted in the ag district, and this particular piece of property, there are two properties, are agriculturally zoned. And currently, our zoning does not allow for that many acres of solar field in an ag district. However, we do very much encourage clean energy, and per capita, Kent County generates the most residential clean energy out of any of the counties in Kent County. So we're looking forward to hearing how this particular case comes out with the Public Service Commission.
And that hearing was held in July. When do you expect a ruling?
Within a couple of months. Right now, they are still fact-finding. There are questions, discoveries.
And they have the final say on this? I mean, so you're going to have to abide by whatever decision they deliver?
Correct. There is an opportunity that we could protest and we could file a claim in court against the project, which may or may not overturn the Public Service Commission ruling.
Do you prefer an alternative proposal? Excuse me, is there something that you're suggesting that APEX does instead of the solar farm?
Well, quite frankly, we have a lot of zones within the county that this type of project is very much encouraged. Industrial, commercial, there are lots of pieces of property that we believe that this would be an ideal fit. The reason the county has traditionally opposed utility scale solar in ag districts is because when you take a farm out of farm production, it affects the local economy. There are a lot of businesses that provide fertilizer, chemicals, services to these farmlands. And if those businesses and companies start folding, then we are losing the character of the county, which, as Mayor Serino mentioned several times, is very, very important to us. That's how we define ourselves.
So we have about a minute left, and I do want to ask about the situation with the hospital in Chestertown, Mr. Mayor. The locally owned hospital was acquired by the University of Maryland Medical System back in 2008, I believe. And there's some concern that hospital may leave Chestertown and locate most of its services in Easton, which is a 45-50 minute drive from Chestertown. And I understand the folks in Chestertown are very concerned about keeping those medical services close to home. Where does that stand at the moment?
It's in an interesting place. I think it's kind of a misnomer that we're worried that the hospital is just going to close its doors. It's more of a matter of what is the hospital going to look like in 10 to 20 years, because they did just invest $4 million in having a beautiful emergency room. I think it's more a matter of, can we as a community work with Shore Regional Health and UMMS to preserve inpatient beds? Because when you take those inpatient beds from a rural area like us and make people go all the way to a place like Easton for their basic services that you can't get at an ER, you know, that's a 45-mile drive just from Chestertown. But this hospital serves all 20,000 residents of Kent County. It serves residents of northern Queen Anne's County and even southern Cecil County. So right now, after a lot of public debate and public meetings, where it stands is there's a rural healthcare commission that's been formed to examine some of the unique challenges of delivering healthcare efficiently in areas like ours, where we're somewhat isolated from mm-hmm. other care centers, and there's transportation issues involved. If we basically become a glorified ER in Chestertown and a family member needs to go to Easton
sure.
for several days, we have a lot of low-income families
right.
and older families. It's really hard for them to get down there.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have. I appreciate both of you joining us this morning. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shelley Herman Heller is the Kent County Administrator. Chris Serino, the mayor of Chestertown. They've joined us this morning from the campus of Washington College in Chestertown. We've got a link to all of the conversations in our series, Focus on the Counties, on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up after a break for the news, Drama for the Disabled, the magical experiences arts company makes theater therapeutic. We'll talk to the group's founder in just a little bit. But first, it's time now for the Environment in Focus.
If you want to join in on the conversation, go to our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning, and make a comment. We'd love to hear from you. You can also check out our audio archives there and learn more about what you just heard, or even make a pledge to support local programming. Again, that's at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. Now, back to the show.
On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. My next guest is Joanne Lewis-Margolius, who directs an arts organization that for 30 years has been presenting workshops and programs for disabled children and adults using theater arts to address areas of emotional conflict. This therapeutic theater group works at places like the Maryland School for the Blind, the Delray School that works with children suffering from traumatic brain injuries, and the Copper Ridge Center, which works with adults in late stages of Alzheimer's and dementia. Joanne Lewis Margolius joins me in the studio to tell us about the Magical Experiences Arts Company. It's nice to meet you.
Thank you, Tom. It's nice to be here.
So you've developed something called emotional stimulation therapy, and I understand that it's different from traditional drama therapy. For those of us who are not erudite in this area, start with traditional drama therapy. What does that do, and then how does your approach of emotional stimulation therapy differ?
Drama therapy began as a way to help people, children, adults with disabilities to find different ways of moving and experiencing life. Now, when I was introduced to drama therapy back in 1986, it was very much entertainment for the children who were participating. It was fun. We did pirate ships and wonderful things like that. But I felt it did not address the needs of the children. They were very, very isolated because of their disabilities. They were often self-injuring because they were frustrated. They couldn't communicate. Most were nonverbal. So I felt drama therapy did not really reach the core of the human being.
So you're dealing with kids and adults who are severely disabled in a variety of ways, but you're talking about, or you're addressing issues of their inner emotional lives.
Yes. The children I work with are all multiply disabled. That means they're not just coping with blindness or cerebral palsy or autism. They have a whole bunch of difficult coping situations because of their disabilities. So I'm reaching out to those children and adults who predominantly cannot speak. So when they're feeling sad, when they're feeling angry, they can't tell me that's how they're feeling. They can't articulate through language. So they will do things physically to tell us. And that's not always good for them or other people, because it could be hitting or biting. It could be hurting themselves. So we've given them a language, a way to express those feelings. But of course, we're also doing the joyful emotions. It's the whole balance.
Yeah, because self-expression is, you know, so fundamental to every human experience, regardless of whether you have a disability or not.
Yes, and the people I work with are so joyful over the most simple things. So we try to balance that with them, that bring out that joy, but at the same time recognize their struggles. And that's why so many of my plays are based on historical characters who have had to struggle in their lives. Helen Keller, of course, is the great example, that even though she struggled, we also know she lived this amazing creative life. So that's where we're trying to help these children and adults feel that.
Is it the case, do you think, that because they are often, as you say, multiply disabled, that the concentration of the people caring for them tends to be on those disabilities and on the and developing, you know, coping skills with those disabilities, and they ignore or they just have to overlook the emotional component of their lives?
I think we see that their clinical age is a two-year-old, even though they're 21. And I think sometimes we get caught up in a cycle of treating them as if they are a two-year-old. And I try to remind people that no, they are creative, they are intelligent, they have a great imagination, they're very powerful human beings, but they are trapped. They are trapped in a body cannot always show that to us. And that's why we started working in memory impairment, because that's exactly what has happened to these adults. They were fathers and mothers and teachers and creative beings, and now they're trapped within a disease where they can't even move their arms and legs. They can no longer talk. So again, we're trying to reach them and show the staff in these nursing homes these are wonderful people who have so much to tell us. They just can't tell us in words anymore.
Yeah, you don't stop living just because you have a disability. Yeah,
no.
Yeah. One of the things that it seems is quite important to you is that when you're doing these theatrical projects, these endeavors, these exercises with your audiences, that there's always an equality between the non-disabled actor and the disabled person in the audience. And that sense of equality is very important for your audience.
Yes, we're
and
going
for you as an actor.
Yes, we're going through this together. This absolutely, the equality is that they have as much to give to this world as the non-disabled person. So how I structure the plays is that my character or another MEAC artist's character is the person that needs to be guided, to be helped during the show. So in a way, we reverse the historical carer to the disabled. If I'm playing Anne Frank and I open a birthday present and it's full of yellow stars, I turn to those children, I turn to those adults, and I reach out to them and I say, help me. I need compassion, I need empathy from them. And they reach out to me. A completely blind, deaf, autistic child will reach out and hold my hand and comfort me. They become my carer. And the same for a person who's memory impaired with dementia. They do nothing for themselves anymore, nothing. They can't get themselves out of bed, they can't eat, they can't make a choice of what they wear. But at that moment—
But they can be empathic to you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so empowering to them.
I'm fascinated in particular with your work with blind children, because theater is such a visual art form. So if they can't see you in your costume with your makeup and your funny clothes and stuff, mm-hmm. how do you connect with them?
Touch. Everything can be conveyed through touch. It has to be done in a really safe, appropriate way. And that's what my biggest challenge was when I first stepped off the plane from Europe, which was all embracing of touch, especially in the schools. When I stepped off the plane to America, people were very nervous about the idea of using touch, especially in education. So what I've tried to do is show people how important touch can be, because it can express emotions. These children can feel my costume and know what character I'm playing. They love the sensory experience of each play. But I also feel the emotions for real. I'm not acting. I'm using something called expressionistic mime, where I have to go into my own life experiences and feel these emotions, pull them out of my body. The emotions literally fill the air. So I think the children who are blind feel what is going on in the room. They don't even need to be touched.
Well, Joanne Lewis-Margolis, it's a pleasure to meet you and hear about your fascinating work. I really appreciate your coming in.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Joanne Lewis-Margolis is the founder and director of Magical Experiences Arts Company. We've got a link to their website on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. On 88.1 WYPR, it is Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you the next time. Have a great day.